I'm actually a licensed dental hygienist. My education is such I've spent 27 years in clinical dental hygiene. So it seems very odd to me that, or to many people, that I would find the policy process so interesting. But I think it's especially important to realize, as a member of the American Public Health Association, with the thousands of members that it has, and the responsibility and the recognition that it has both nationally and internationally, that the members of this association have the ability to put forth policies that the association supports and can move forward and can actually make change with very, very small guidelines in order to do that process. So what I'd actually like to do is to ask who in the audience has submitted a grant proposal before, if you could raise your hand in some fashion. So we all know that grant proposals have directions and instructions to them. And the instructions particularly are there so that you can weed out those people that don't follow the instructions and potentially wouldn't be using your funding in a proper manner. And the policy process here is a similar one, not to weed out policies that don't follow the guidelines, so we're not even going to review them, but really to have a process by which you can move that process forward in the system in a smooth and easy transition, and so that it has all of the parts and the pieces to it that can gain the support of the American Public Health Association so that it can do the work that it needs to do. The purpose of an APHA policy actually serves as the work of the serves to support the foundation's work and the members' work. It also is an historical record of the work of this association. We know that they've been having annual meetings for over 138 years, so we can actually take a look inside the policies and see where the historical record of public health has been and where the association has stood. All APHA policies, because of that fact, must be relevant, credible, practical, and reinforced by peer-reviewed, evidence-based research. And I put the relevance on credible, practical, and peer-reviewed. And hopefully throughout this process, I'll give you some examples of what might not be credible, practical, or perhaps peer-reviewed. So this is just a brief glimpse of the policy calendar, and as you can see, starting about this point in time, people are starting to think about the policies that they're going to be developing for submittal to APHA in February, and as Don mentioned, that the policy calendar is sitting on the back in a printed format. But we're really looking at a policy process that takes us from February to potentially June, when the final review takes place in July, and then we have a sort of space to wait till the membership takes its last review and a vote of those policies occurs. So most of the work that you're doing to prepare that policy is between now and February. So the most common reasons a proposed policy is rejected. The formatting guidelines weren't followed. There's an official template that APHA provides. This is a sample of that official template that was used in this past policy process year. People aren't reading the directions carefully and making sure that all of the information is requested and that it's carefully written out and provided. Many of the units that aren't that have been used in the review process or in the development process need to be included on the template so that we have the full information of all of the sections that actually are supporting and had involvement in writing this particular policy, as well as the fact that if the policy is written on behalf of a section, but a few members are actually providing that policy and developing it, you need to have the section's leadership sign off on that policy. And that's part of the template and the formatting guidelines. They're all the same. Sections are units. They're called units because their sections, SPIGs, and caucuses are part of the units. Also, in terms of formatting guidelines, you need to provide 3 to 5 keywords as part of that policy process. the paper, as well as the margin size is particular. And again, if all of you have written grant proposals, you realize that this is part of the grant proposal process that you may be doing. They tell you what font size, how many pages it can be, what the megabyte size may be. In New Times Roman, but also especially important other references and the fact that they need to be in AMA format. On the right-hand side of this, left-hand side of the slide, is actually directly from the American Public Health Association website. It tells you how to put these references in the proper format. So all of the information is provided for you. What they're not doing is writing the policy. Everything else is there. We often find that when policies or proposed policies are submitted, if we look back, there's already an existing policy on the books that's incredibly similar to the proposed policy that's being put forward. So it's important to do your homework ahead of time, looking in terms of keywords on the APHA website to look to see if there's existing policies, and perhaps considering updating those existing policies with the new information that you're trying to put forward. Also, you need to list the existing policies as part of the formatting guidelines. There's the specific spot that says, is this supporting an existing policy? Is this replacing an existing policy? Is it an updating an existing policy? And listing what those policies are. And this, in fact, is a picture of the American Public Health Association's website showing the page where you can search for the policy statements. You don't have to have a membership to search the policy statements. You simply have to click on the box, put in keywords, and the specific policies that are related to that will pop up for you to be able to read and utilize. Most importantly, the information presented to support the policy statement must be evidence-based. The proposed policies must be credible. The information, as I said earlier, coming from the American Public Health Association is respected by many national and international organizations. So we don't want policies on the books or proposed policies coming forward that don't have the evidence to support that policy. What you need to be sure to do is to look to see and ask these questions. The article that you're pulling the information from, have you read it? Is the information that you're pulling from it important to the policy that you're trying to put forward? Was the methodology in that science accurate? Was it the most up-to-date information that's being provided? And is the source reliable? I'll give you an example. As a dental hygienist in the oral health section, we put fluoridation and fluoride policies, or proposed policies, forward at certain times. Certain organizations call themselves credible organizations, and to the average person, they may in fact seem credible organizations. For example, the American Association of Technical and Science Preventive Oral Health. Sounds incredibly credible, authoritative, and in fact, the information that they put forward are anti-fluoridation messages. They aren't fluoridation messages. They're a group of anti-fluoridationists who know nothing about science. So when you're moving things forward, we'd ask that you really look for credible sources. And I say this in jest, but like the Star Tribune isn't a credible source. Personal communications, unless it's perhaps with the president or HHS, isn't a credible source. So you need to be sure that things are followed up and behind, because what happens is when we review that process, we actually look at those recommendations, we look at the references, we look at the dates of the references, and to see whether or not there's more up-to-date information that can be provided. We also strongly encourage you to request input and review from the epidemiology section before submitting the policy. The epidemiology section always, 100% of the time, provides comments on every single proposed policy. They do their homework. So if you can work with them ahead of time, I'm sure they would be happy that they wouldn't be doing homework in such a short amount of review time, but in fact that they've had the ability to work with you. We also want to be sure that the messages are not internally directed. The arguments and the action steps need to be externally directed. We want to know what you want APHA to move forward with our collaborators and our partners. What do you want us to tell those people that they need to do? What should we be recommending? So many of the recommendations and the action steps that are written are internally directed to what APHA should be doing rather than what our partners should be doing. So you want to be sure that all of those recommendations or action steps are relevant, appropriate, and feasible. We don't want to be recommending in a proposed policy that APHA doesn't serve sugar snacks because they cause tooth decay. How would appropriate and relevant would that be for the American Public Health Association to support that policy? When in fact, perhaps another way of reducing the amount of tooth decay might be more relevant. You also want to be sure that the action steps are culturally responsive. And in fact, in doing that, that might be a way of collaborating with other sections. You also want to be sure that you're working with other sections and SPIGs and caucuses, so those other units in terms of collaboration. When you're developing a policy, they may in fact have other ideas on what those external action steps may in fact be to move that policy forward. So a few hints in terms of writing an APHA policy. As I just said, collaborating with other units, SPIGs and caucuses, et cetera. Many hands make the work light so that you're not having to write the entire policy on your own. You also have, right from the ground floor, the support of the other units in terms of getting that proposal moved forward to the very, very end. I'm sure you can find ways that the topic that you find to be relevant is also relevant to other units within the American Public Health Association. Also remembering that the important purpose of the American Public Health Association is to improve the public's health. Not in fact to perhaps improve something that's incredibly passionate or important to you specifically, but the public themselves. And that's really what the policy should be directed at. Also looking in fact on the American Public Health Association's website, each year they address their overarching priorities. Seeing in fact if the policy that you're developing can address some of the overarching policy and the policy gaps that APHA has addressed within their within the scope of all of the policies that we have. So this is sort of drawing toward the end of my presentation, but really looking at balancing what you feel is important to move forward in this association to improve the public's health with the knowledge that you have, the knowledge that the SPIGs, the caucuses, and the other sections that you're collaborating with have, but also balancing the process with peer-reviewed science and research, and being sure that it really is supported out there so that we can maintain the credibility of the association and the work that it does. And finally, the American Public Health Association has quite a lot of resources online. This is a page where you can actually read what those proposed policies have been, the ones that have been approved and moved forward. But if you also take a look towards the end, there's webinars on how to develop a proposed policy. So you can go through the webinar and find the important information. There's a PowerPoint presentation on how to develop the proposed policy, as well as the calendar is there so that you don't miss any important deadlines for moving that forward. Thank you very much.